I'm having tea with Heather Urquhart from the Maydays. Heather, I'm going to start with a quote and I want your reaction to it.
Oh, my God.
Here we go. So this is the quote. Teaching improvisation is like teaching love. It's a very worthy endeavour, but ultimately impossible. What would you say to that?
I agree. I actually agree. I read a really nice article recently about teaching improvisation, because you can't teach making stuff up. I mean, you can't teach spontaneity. All you can do is help unlock people and help them not worry so much about what they create. And then, I guess, you know, because I obviously teach a lot of improvisation, controversial Paul Levy, but all I can do is sort of facilitate a session on an area that we might work on and say, so we're going to do this today, and that might produce these results. And you might enjoy those and you might not, because some people like comedic improvisation, some people like music, some people like more theatrical. So for me, teaching, quotation marks, in an audio interview is more about facilitating people to improvise rather than telling them what to do. And I'm disturbed when I meet improv teachers who say, do it like this.
So that suggests it's locked, and that suggests it's in all of us. So why is it locked?
I think a lot of people have a lot of fear around improvising. I think most people who I've come to contact with, I've broken them down in a good way. But I think a lot of people are worried about the quality of what they create, and they think that what they create in improvisation isn't funny or clever enough, or they're not as interesting as the other person, or, you know, oh, I could never do that. And I think that what's so beautiful about it is that everyone's unique, and whatever you create is worthy and brilliant. And so my interest is in getting people, bring that out of people in a way that they don't feel self-conscious, really.
When you here comes the tea and the cake. When you unlock it, why does it tend, not always, but it tends towards laughter?
Well, I suppose laughter is a surprise reaction, isn't it? And sometimes can be a fear reaction, and it's a release of tension, isn't it? I just knocked the microphone. Thank you. It's a release of tension, so I suppose improvisation can lend itself to comedy, because we don't know what's coming next, and there are surprises along the way and things happening all the time that when they surprise the performer as well as the audience. I mean, it's my favourite when you see words come out of a performer's mouth and they didn't know they were going to say that. It's funny.
I guess I'm going to, I mean, my theory, because we're ultimately going to be talking about an improvised comedy show, and the Maydays do a lot of that, is that for a lot of people, when you unlock one door, they come into a room of sort of quite often light comedy. So they're now in another locked room. It's a bit bigger and there's more space, but then there's more unlocking to do, isn't there?
I don't think the journey ever ends. I mean, you know, I've been improvising for 12 or so years, and I'm constantly learning new things, and I'm constantly locking myself up and unlocking myself. I mean, I see it much like a sort of practice like yoga or something, really. You know, you don't ever crack it. You just learn new things about yourself and discover things and get excited about working on certain areas. I mean, the comedy thing's interesting because what the show we're going to be talking about is billed as a comedy show, but the last few years we've been really disciplining ourselves to try and push into those more non-comedic areas and just be comfortable with whatever the improvisation lends itself to. That's what we'll go with, and if it's funny, great, and if it's not, that's fine too. We used to panic, I think, when there was silence, and now we just go, okay, let's just concentrate on the moment and trust that it's going to be good enough, and it doesn't have to be funny.
Now, the Maydays perform improv, and most people would say, you know, you can't rehearse because there's no script, but what you do is, even though you've been doing it for a long time, you do a lot of work together to get into that flow state, so you're having to unlock all the time, aren't you?
Definitely, yeah. Every week, every Monday without fail, sometimes London, sometimes Brighton, we get together and we do some rehearsals on specific shows, because some of the shows will have a certain flavour or genre or style, you know, stylistic choice maybe. And other weeks we'll just get together and work on sort of more general skills, you know, like maybe we'll think, oh, we haven't been doing many characters lately, let's do a bit of a character boot camp kind of thing, or we get outside facilitators in to come and poke us and prod us. Yeah, so we're always working, you know.
And then you get to the idea for a show. So how, for example, this one's just called The Fringe Show, but how did you decide, and why did you decide to do this particular show?
We've done a few shows the last sort of 5 years or so which have worked from source material. So we do the Argus show, which is fantastically fun, working from our beloved local paper, the Argus, and we also did one which did really well called Confessions, which is working with people's written stories. And so for The Fringe, we're thinking, what can we do that would still work with that skill we've been working on, but is kind of more related to The Fringe? That kind of felt really, really obvious. There's another group that did in Edinburgh a few years ago called Scratch Impro, who don't do it anymore. So we took that sort of premise, and then we've tried to put our own sort of spin in it. So the first half we sort of try and literally do the shows as written, and faithfully as well, because we never wanted to be like, we're going to take the mickey out of other people's shows, which is tricky, you know, if you read a description. So we're like, let's be complimentary about the shows, let's do them how we'd imagine them, you know. So if it is spoken word, let's do the best spoken word that we can, and we hope the audience enjoys us trying and failing, but genuinely trying, not kind of, you know, standing above it and commenting on it, but actually trying to do it. So we try and do that in the first half, and the second half we do a longer piece kind of inspired by this one suggestion.
And how do you avoid mediocrity?
We don't.
What a great advert for a show.
God, that's a question. Well, the Fringe show, I find, we were talking about this the other night, actually, because what's wonderful about the Fringe show is, how many words do you get in the brochure? Is it 50 or 70 or something?
Yeah, not a lot.
So you've got 500 companies who put their heart, soul and passion into selling their show, and they've used those 50 to 70 words to make it sound like the most interesting thing you could ever go and see. So for us, it's an absolute delight. You know, we're just like, that sounds amazing. And we were talking recently about how some of us know a lot of people in shows, or we might know the director, we're familiar with it. And we were saying, oh, if we know the work, should we kind of step out of it a little bit? But we've actually gone the other way now. We're like, well, if we know something about it, we should use our knowledge, you know, play to the top of our intelligence and actually kind of do something that becomes sort of inspired by that in some way. So even on Monday, we did a piece that was quite serious, actually. It turned into something quite serious, and I was, because I'm the director of the Fringe show, so I sit out and watch and kind of give people notes, and I was like, that's great, guys. They did a really great job of doing a sort of serious piece with something silly.
I guess also part of what I'm interested in is that I've seen lots of improv, and it tends to be very fast, and there's certainly a spectacle in, oh my God, you know, this isn't scripted, and look how fast it is. Mm. But then there are some groups that have gone beyond that, and they just improvise, and that can be very slow, and there can be silences, and you can kind of go beyond what I call mediocrity, is a standard format of improv, which is just quick fire, trying to largely impress the audience with how fast we are.
Yeah. Well, I'm very a big fan, or certainly I'm thinking about at the moment, is like the musicality of a show and the tone of a show. Mm. And when you're improvising, you're in charge of that. You know, you're directing it as you go, and so one of the things we also try to do is pace it and give it a variety of tone. So if we have had a bunch of, you know, we quite often get people trying to pimp us to do the dance numbers, for example. So what we try to do is vary up the sections of the Fringe. So if it has gone really wacky and silly for a while, because that can be fun too, you know, I'm not going to say we don't do silly stuff, but to try and have a light and shade and a bit of a kind of variation in the tone and the pace of the show, so we're not, because we don't know what kind of a show it's going to be. I mean, sometimes we come out and we go, wow, that was heavy. Mm. And sometimes we come off and we're crying with laughter because we've just really enjoyed ourselves and had a great time. But we do try and think about varying the tone of a show, you know, so that it's not one thing all the way through.
I've also heard some improvisers say to me, I mean, one particular comment stuck, which was that the structure in improv, so, you know, the songs that we do, the games quite often, that structure should be a tool for the improv, not a crutch for it. So how do the May Days ensure that, you know, that you do put structure into improv? It's not just kind of unstructured long form, but that it's not something that feels like you're cheating. It actually feels like, yeah, the reason for that is it's actually helping us improvise even more.
Do you know, the word structure to me is, I've sort of lost meaning of it in a way. Like, there's obviously some things that are really structured, like you might take something like a Harold, sorry, geek term, but, you know, that's a long-form structure that came from Chicago that has, you know, this opening, three beats, something, you know, that's very, very structured. And then we might, for example, in certain shorter gigs, have structured songs that we know will work, like we'll do a love song for an audience member or something. But now, generally, in our shows, we don't tend to have structure, but we just tend to have like techniques available to us that if we notice that they are happening, then we'll follow them, as opposed to pre-deciding. Because for a while we wanted to do more sort of story-based narrative improv, and we found that whenever we decided we were going to tell a story about these two people, that we'd instantly hate the characters and then we'd be stuck with them for like the next 45 minutes. So now we go, okay, well, this feels like it's a story about these two people, so we'll follow that. Or this feels like it might be more of a sort of thematic piece about all the people that work in this hospital. Let's go to all the different... So what we tend to do now is just notice what's happening and do that, as opposed to deciding we're going to do this structure before. And does that make sense? Mm. But, yeah, I mean, I find the word structure difficult because...
Yeah, it's just a lot of companies say in Edinburgh that they're very structured improv shows.
And then there are, you know. I mean, we've certainly done them over the years, and there'll be ones that we'll return to that will be. And some of them are fantastic, you know. Some of them work really, really well. I think I'm just too lazy I get too bored, you know, to do the same structure over again. But, for example, Degrees of Error from Bristol, who I absolutely love and I direct with them sometimes, they have a really tight formatted murder mystery show, and it's fantastic. It's so theatrical. They're wonderful actors, and you know, they have the denouement at the end and everything, and I never get bored watching that show. But I think that's a testament to them, that they have worked on that and they have the discipline to it, but it feels fresh every single time, even though it has its own structure.
And so off stage, has doing a lot of improv affected your life? Are you spontaneous all over the place, improvising all the time, or are you like anally structured when you're back in life? Has it affected you doing all of this? Has it changed who you are?
I think so, yeah. It's changed me a lot in that I worry a lot less about stuff. I worry a lot less about things going wrong and what people think. I'm a lot more relaxed about the possibility of everything cocking up, and that feels good. I hope that it's made me engage with people more. So, you know, not waiting for your turn to speak, actually, and allowing yourself to be changed and allowing yourself to be surprised by people all the time. The negative effect it's had is that I say yes to way too many things. You know, you can say yes and too much, because sometimes I just find myself doing the most ridiculous things and I go, damn you, improv.
So it has changed you in a way.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, a lot of people who do our courses say it changes them, so if it wasn't changing us, I'd be a bit worried, I suppose.
And then finally, then, coming on to this particular show, so what are the flavours of this show that are different from what you've done before?
It's very big, loud, musical, magical, cartoon-like in a way, because, as I say, the descriptions are so evocative that it just gives us a kind of mainline to drama or comedy or dance or anything like that, and things that I guess sometimes we might be not as brave to do, but when we're saying this is the show that we're doing, we do that. And then the second half is good old Mayday-style storytelling, inspired by whatever fantastic show we get on the night. So it's quite exciting. And you know what is tricky? Is that up until midway through The Fringe, I can't read the brochure and book shows like a normal person. I have to just go to what my friends tell me, because otherwise I'll, like, read it all and then I'll already have, like, ideas in my head. So the bummer for us is that we can't really read The Fringe brochure too much, otherwise we'll start pre-planning things in our head. The others might, but I don't. For the record,
final evil question, because I know you haven't warmed up and I don't think you've got one of these, so I'm just going to throw this at you. I want the title of your autobiography.
Oh my god,
thank you very much. Sorry, I thought that was it.
Unfortunately, it's already a philosophy book, but fuck it, would probably be pretty good for me. Am I allowed to say that on this?
Yeah,
fuck it.
Available in all good bookshops some point in the future. Heather Urquhart, thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul.